Tuesday night.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. Once again, back with you to break down the good, the bad, the ugly, and the beautiful over the course of the last 48 or 72 hours in all things Spurs. You've got a fully fit squad. No 50%ers in here. No one passing late fitness tests. Everyone at max capacity. Shawnee Walsh, back in the game. How you doing, brother? You all right?
Yeah, good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, look. Do you know what? I can't even work. It's been such a weird week. Can't even work it out. Can't work it out. Hunter Godson? All good in your end?
Yeah, not too bad, mate.
Jude, you're in
yeah,
one
no complaints.
And
yeah,
no Dan complaints. Kilpatrick, how are you?
I'm all right, yeah.
Yeah, now, do you know what? I think everyone sort of, it sounds really silly saying this, but I feel like everyone's reaction has pretty much hit the nail on the head from yesterday. It's just like, yeah. So what we're going to do, we're going to, as ever, we'll do good, bad, ugly, beautiful, and we'll kind of nip through all of the important stuff. Let's just do top line takes off the back of Spurs losing 1-0 to Man City. Sean, I'll come to you first, mate. What is your overarching takeaway from yesterday?
I think it's just that we're just going to rely on so many kind of things going our way in order to really come away from that. And the feeling I had from the whole game was we were playing it like an NFL match. Like we were just trying to get up the pitch so incrementally with each possession we had up by inches. And I think, when was it? It was like 20, 25 minutes. We had our first real chance, Aurier cross for Kane. And the longer the game went on, it was really annoying that, you know, it's still 0-0. In the last few years, we've been City's bogey team. We might be able to sneak this. And then, obviously, just kind of falls flat. But I'm not too kind of disheartened by it because I had no expectations going into this final. I did not expect a team managed by the youngest manager in Premier League history to come up with an amazing game plan against like Pep Guardiola and the most well-oiled machine in European football. It just felt so unrealistic that we were ever going to get something. So I'm not losing my mind about it. I think there are things that annoyed me, like I don't think we played with much intensity, but I think the players didn't look fit. I think the substitutes were very confusing, but ultimately I just don't think there were many universes in which Spurs prevailed yesterday.
That's a really interesting way of kind of referencing it, Sean. It almost to me conjures up that image of like that there's like a type of solar eclipse, isn't there, where all the planets are in one line and you're like, yeah, it happens once every like 4,000 years or something. It definitely felt like yesterday with the fact that we'd changed a manager within 5 days maybe of a major final, the fact that Harry Kane is sort of coming back from fitness, the fact that Man City are possibly the best team in Europe, if not the world. Everything had to align, Jude, in order for us to kind of come away from that being like, oh, we've nicked it 1-0.
Yeah, that just reminded me of the Avengers Endgame bit where Iron Man turns to Doctor Strange and he says, do we win in this one? That wasn't the one yesterday, unfortunately. Maybe. Yeah. I think my main take is that, it's Tottenham in beaten by better team, shocker, really. And for most of it, they were just suffocated out of the game, and I think they had two shots in all. I'm not particularly disappointed. It's hard, but you know, it was coming, and they did get the goal, and it's just tough to take, but it is what it is.
And we should reference the fact that there was a number of Spurs fans back in the stadium. You were there yesterday. Did it make you feel a little bit emotional, bring a tear to the eye here, and I win the Spurs once more?
Yeah, Ryan Mason's Blue in My Army did hit me in the feels. Yeah, it was really good to have fans back. I mean, it was, you know, it's genuinely been easy to forget what it's like to have fans in the stadium. You know, I've been going to every game behind closed doors since June, and it's amazing how quickly you get accustomed to things, and it's amazing how quickly that became the actual new normal. So that was really stirring to have fans back, and that's a positive at least. And it really gives us something to look forward to next season, even when kind of things around the club on and off the pitch do feel quite bleak at the moment. So that was great. And yeah, just to kind of echo what the guy said, really, I think to win that kind of game in the current state the club's in, you need a break, like some kind of bounce of the ball or just something to go your way. And that, you know, that might have been the sending off, I suppose. You know, had Laporte gone, you know, that might have been the break Spurs needed, but it didn't happen. And I think Mason got it wrong, but then I also think like Mason's the last person to blame for what happened, you know. So
6 days in. Get him out.
Hunter, but I saw so many tweets yesterday basically referencing the fact that it was a lot easier a couple of weeks ago, feeling perhaps a little bit less in games, as opposed to maybe 10 minutes in or 15 minutes in, where Eric Dier is making a block from a ball essentially just flying into the back of the net, and you're like,
yeah, yeah. It was, you know, it was the full array of emotion yesterday. It was complete despair, joy to despair to sort of hope, and then that's all shattered. You know, that's what being a football fan is, isn't it? Especially being a Spurs fan. And so I'll be honest, I quite enjoyed caring again. No, because I really did care yesterday. And although we didn't, you know, we didn't really put anything together, even though, you know, when Højbjerg has that chance to slide Reguilón in, I was angry that he got it wrong. I was pissed off that he didn't make that pass. And, you know, there was only a couple of moments. But, you know, I was up on the edge of my seat again. Whereas, you know, in the Everton game, not the Everton game, the game a couple of weeks ago.
Newcastle?
I remember texting you guys saying, I didn't celebrate when we scored and I didn't celebrate when we conceded. It was just like a flat line throughout. So, you know, there are so many things wrong with what's happening at Spurs right now. And to only lose 1-0 to that City team is, you know, a miracle in a way.
A moral victory.
Yeah.
There was a lot of wet and wild takes yesterday, which I found quite interesting. Almost, I texted Hunter last night saying I'm going to head out to the demilitarized zone for some fresh air, because it was getting spicy. Yeah, it really was. It was getting a bit heated in there. So I thought, right, get myself out of here and just try and avoid some of this. But let's go into the good stuff first. And I would like to kind of tee this one up for you guys. Out of all of the things that possibly were going to be ways in which we conceded goals, the one that I was probably most worried about was our lack of consistency in centre-back positions that could just lead to an error. And in the first half, Eric Dier and Toby Alderweireld, Toby was rolling back the years and he was making blocks and it was really stirring these things, sort of these feelings in me of like, oh my God, he used to do that every single game with Jan. Mm. Those two together just stopped everything there at all. And Eric Dier looked like a very, very solid centre-back. You know, the block that he made was phenomenal. Were you impressed by them, Jude, in the first half?
Yeah, I actually thought for the most part, they defended brilliantly. Just because for a lot of this season, those centre-backs look or have looked like they've been playing with fear. And, you know, that they could make a mistake at any moment. But here it was like they were taking responsibility and going out and making these incredible blocks. I think Toby had a couple in that first half where it was just sort of like, I'd already like put my hands on my head in resignation to it going in and being like, oh, that's 1-0. And then somebody's like, oh, Jesus, what a block. That's crazy. But yeah, I just thought they were more proactive in defending than the old sit back and hope for the best, which, you know, I don't think would have worked particularly well yesterday. But yeah, those two. Eric Dier looked, that was probably his best performance for a while, like for a long time. So I think those two, yeah, they absolutely smashed out of the park.
Mm. There's something to be said for the way we played yesterday, and Alderweireld and Dier saw a lot of the ball. There's something to be said about confidence growing when you've got the ball at your feet and feeling more comfortable in a game when you've seen a lot of the ball, you've felt a lot of the ball. And I think we really saw that yesterday because they were basically, you know, we played how we used to play under Pochettino. So out the centre-backs, back to the centre-backs, out wide, you know, the setup. And they just looked more comfortable for it. And, you know, you do wonder under Jose Mourinho, the centre-back seeing less and less in the ball in comfortable positions, if it just became so jumpy that the mistakes started coming in, and we have spoken about it on here, I don't think the way we used to play suited the centre-backs, and I think you saw yesterday what they are capable of. I still don't think Eric Dier is going to be the man to Spurs should build their defence on. I think Alderweireld is probably coming to the end of his powers, although he should stay at the club. But it was really nice to see them both performing really well. And I also think Hugo Lloris needs to be chucked in there as well. He made a couple of really, really top class saves yesterday that he makes look quite routine, but he is cat-like in the way that he moves across the goal. He's really, really pounces. And, you know, those three deserve credit. And that might be the end of the credit list, to be honest.
Yeah. Anyone else pick out any sort of good day yesterday? I mean, we can save a couple of bits for Be Beautiful that may be a little bit more metaphorical, but in terms of the actual good stuff, in terms of the way that we were playing,
I thought Lucas was quite good.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. That's yeah. Go on, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, when I was thinking about who Kane would replace, it was Lucas, right? You know, the same again, please. You know, you step out, Harry Kane comes back in. And I was really surprised when Bale wasn't in the side, and I'm really disappointed, to be honest, because I thought, you know, he's the kind of big game player you want on that stage and in that occasion, who could just take half a chance and create something out of nothing. So I was disappointed in Mason's call there. But I do think, you know, the only person who was kind of relieving a bit of pressure in the first half and breaking the press at all was Lucas. And, you know, he's got a lot of stick, but I think, you know, over the course of the whole Mourinho era, you know, he's one of the few players that kind of emerges with credit for that. He had a really strong spell, even when everything around him was kind of crumbling toward the end under Jose. And he was good, you know, and he, it's not like he sulks and kind of let his head drop. It looked like Mourinho sacking, you know, could mean he was one of the kind of big losers from it, but obviously not. You know, Mason seems to value him as well. And I did think he was good. And, you know, the only kind of couple of occasions where Spurs managed to break the press is when he wriggled away and kind of countered. And that, you know, arguably Laporte, you know, could have gone. Although I do, you know, I agree with Mason that City is so clever at those tactical fouls that there's no way he'd be making the second one if he'd already got a booking for the first one. You know, yeah. Someone else would have just fouled Lucas.
There was five different players that did it, wasn't there? They did two.
Oh yeah, it was genuinely quite impressive to watch. Spurs could not counter because City took it in turns to foul them on the halfway line. It's a really good tactic, and it worked really well.
That there's a lot of teams that can learn from that, really. Because you talk about how beautiful City are on the ball a lot. I think we all wax lyrical about how good they are on the ball. And they were brilliant yesterday. We didn't get anywhere near them. But that is a part of the game that Barcelona were very good at as well. You'd even say Lionel Messi at some point under Pep Guardiola had the most fouls in La Liga. Like this, it's just part of the game that Pep teaches his players. And it's the sort of the dirty underbelly that you need to be good at to win titles and win cups. And it's... yeah, as Dan said, it was genuinely quite impressive at points yesterday where it's like, right, you go, and then you go, then we'll keep rotating it so the ref doesn't think it's two in a row, through, you know, because they do come over and they're going, that was three. And you go, no, it wasn't. He did it last time, wasn't me. But yeah, they were very good at it, yes.
That's so true, Hunter. You know, when you have that thought process, you're like, he's already been booked. And you're like, oh my God, it was another one.
Which one of these fucking... But I think I don't think he had a fantastic game all round. But I think along with Lucas, Lo Celso was growing into the game. And although some were saying he was looking tired, I thought he was the one of the three midfielders that looked most likely to make something happen. I saw Alistair Gold game with five, and I was like, that's a bit harsh. I definitely don't think he was a five, but. But yeah,
what did Dan give him? Dan, you love player ratings.
I wasn't doing ratings yesterday. Thank
you. What would you have given him?
So we can still slag you off.
I'm going to go higher than Alistair now. I genuinely thought Lo Celso and Lucas were. I mean, I'm sure we'll come on to this, but you know that was a strange substitution because I thought they were probably two of the brightest players, and I would have given Lo Celso a seven, I reckon. The best chance, didn't he? Forced.
Lovely shot.
Stefan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely shot.
I suppose we've touched on the defence in terms of the things that they did really well. I suppose we should move on to the bad bits and just kind of look at the structure of the team and the way that we approach the game. Shawnee, I don't know about you, but I certainly find it quite difficult to watch at times with us pinging balls in at waist height to midfielders that were struggling to control the ball at the best of times, let alone with three City players breathing down their neck.
Yeah, I guess this kind of comes back to the fact that we have this rookie manager in charge who has like had absolutely no time at all to get this really meddling team out of their bad habits, to just find some sort of semblance of a good game plan. Because the thing that really annoys me is when people have been saying now, it's a very easy narrative to run, like, oh, if Jose was there, it would have been different. It's a cup final, all this kind of stuff. Like, we saw exactly how Jose would have set up for this final in the game at the Etihad a couple of months ago. And we were so bad. We were so much worse than yesterday. Somehow, like, I don't understand how people have been watching Spurs for this season and have been thinking, yeah, Jose would have been the one to fix that. So I think maybe part of the reason Levy acted when he did was to maybe just clear like the clouds above the club a little bit, to give the players a little boost, a little bit of a new manager bounce. They have someone that everyone kind of respects and they know really well, and someone who, you know, I think all those people have seen his tweets now, like, he really is a believer that Spurs have enough quality to be playing good football. And maybe that was just the hope. And unfortunately, like I said it earlier, it was always going to be such a tough ask. But yeah, if you can always look at the game and think, what could we have done better? Like, you're right. I don't like it when our like midfield of Højbjerg, Winks, Lo Celso is just getting pressed into oblivion and they're getting balls fired at them. Like, you know, that Borussia Dortmund's training thing. Fire into the thing. It was like that. And so it was, yeah, the first half in particular was just so uncomfortable. It was like wave after wave of City attack within 5 seconds of us having a goal kick, which would play short.
Yeah, it's that thing of they cut away to do a replay during the goal kick, and when it comes back to the play, it's just back in City's hands. You're like, I would have quite liked to see the goal kick just to see us in possession for 2 seconds.
That's so true. There were so many times when they did like little glamour shots of people on the side, and I was like, stop, we've got the ball.
We're not going to have it again.
God's sake.
Yeah.
Dude, what was your sort of take on the structure? I mean, I suppose we should also talk a little bit about the actual starting team. Were you surprised with the 11 that was selected?
I was surprised that we didn't see Ndombele whatsoever. I think the rest of the team is pretty much spot on, but for him to not be on the pitch at all, I'm not sure if he has there's something around him where people don't rate his defensive work, because I actually think he's like reasonable enough in defence. It's not his biggest strength, but he's not like a weakness in there. And it wasn't really a game where we could see Harry Winks at his best either, because, you know, if we're waxing lyrical about Harry Winks, it'll be when he played Real Madrid and he was on the ball and he was springing passes left and right, but we just didn't have enough of the ball, and he's not really amazing at resisting any sort of press when he does have the ball. There are a few little moments where he picked it up and went forward, but he didn't have that same Ndombele quality where he feints one way and then goes the other and just creates space out of absolutely nowhere. And I think that really would have helped Spurs just get more of a foothold in the game, and like get them playing on the break a little better and getting the ball to Son and Kane, who just didn't really have enough of it really to cause any problems. The rest of the team, I think, is pretty much bang on. Maybe Bale in there somewhere, but apart from that, like, no complaints over the starting 11 whatsoever.
Dan, I saw some of your tweets throughout the game, and I could sort of sense that you were probably, as a Spurs fan, almost feeling as suffocated as the team was during the game. It had that real feeling during the first half of almost like a boa constrictor just wrapping around Spurs' midfield and squeezing the life out of it.
Yeah, City is so impressive. Like, you're genuinely kind of like, have they got 15 players or something? What's going on? it's not just on the ball, and obviously they're great on the ball, but every time Spurs got it and managed to kind of transfer it from the centre-halves or Lloris into midfield, they just had to go backwards. Like, all the passing lanes were cut off every single time. And it was just kind of relentless pressure. I think, yeah, boa constrictor is a good way of putting it. I thought the omission, playing that way and not including Ndombele, was really baffling. I mean, tweeted during the game, you know, he's the only player who would kind of potentially be able to beat the City press. I think I saw Michael Cox going further this morning saying that there's no other player in the Premier League or no other midfielder in the Premier League who'd have been better suited to that way of playing. I asked Mason about it afterwards as well, and he didn't answer the question. You know, I asked him effectively why Ndombele didn't start, and he just talked about the style in general. So we don't know if there was a kind of injury there or fitness concerns, but you know, the only real chance Spurs had playing that way, you know, which was literally Lloris and Alderweireld standing in the 6-yard box next to Lloris at goal kicks. You know, that's how kind of deep they were from that situation. The only chance playing that way is to have a kind of Ndombele or obviously the master Moussa Dembele himself, who can wriggle out of tight holes and beat a press and get away from a couple of men. Winks can't do that. Lo Celso almost did it a couple of times, just with the quickness of his passing and his feet. But, you know, Ndombele would have given Spurs a chance to basically transition up the pitch, which they just weren't able to do nearly enough, barring a couple of counterattacks in the second half when the game became a bit stretched.
So, Hunter, with that in mind, does that make you sad, or is it more kind of like, oh, I just feel like what might have been, or there's that questions unanswered, or are you falling down in that camp of, do you know what, City are so good that it kind of is insignificant?
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest, mate. It's always going to be, because we don't know, there's always going to be a lingering question of what could have been. But let's be honest, Ndombele can turn three or four players as many times as you want. It's the second ball and the third ball.
Only one Hunter Godson, as we know.
Dan, I'm going to make this happen. Somewhere in our lives, we're going to make this happen. We're going to get to Power League five-a-sides.
It really is your, has there ever been a boy born who can swim faster than a shark moment?
Well, ask me, do I think Dembele could have changed the game yesterday? Yes, I do. no, but you know, yeah, of course there's going to be a question of what if, but let's be honest, there's no mistake. City are a beast of a different nature to us, and our passing beyond the midfield wasn't good enough or sharp enough, and I mean, we'll probably come on to it in another section, but Kane and Son just weren't massively out. I was actually very impressed with what Kane's output was on the ball. I thought it was brilliant on the ball, but he just didn't look quite as sharp as he normally does in terms of movement off the ball. And people at the game were saying similar.
So I was going to
think it was...
I
was saying to my dad, like, during the game, I was like, I'm really surprised that Mason didn't put Vinicius on the bench, because I think, knowing that Kane was only so fit, it would have been nice to have had an actual kind of target man option with Kane dropping a little bit deeper into the 10 role, if possible. And we found it so hard getting up the pitch all game. And when Bale came on, he hardly got a sniff from wide right. Sissoko was doing a lot of dropping deep to try and get the ball as well. And yeah, look, I don't want to lay into Mason too much, because he is just so young and so inexperienced. But this is the kind of things he's got to be answering. Like, this is the criticisms that you're going to face as the head coach of Spurs.
At 60 minutes, I think... was tweeting, bring on Fernando Llorente. So I was thinking similar lines to you, Sean. Because I honestly thought, I don't think Diaz or Laporte could get round Llorente. And it does just make you wonder again, why did we let him go and bring in Carlo? Anyway, that's probably a different discussion for a different day, but there you go.
Yeah, don't tug at that thread. Get us into all sorts of bother. I think we can try and club this together, because Hunter mentioned it there, and I think we'll put it in the ugly. I mean, it's never good seeing Son crying. It's particularly not good seeing Son crying off the back of a performance like that. he spoke so well on Spurs TV last week after the Southampton game about saying that there's no pride in turning up. There's no pride in just getting to a final. Pride comes from getting to the final and then winning it. Mm. But I have to say, Sonny probably had one of those days that we thought were kind of behind him. You know, I thought like he occasionally has them. But in big games, it's so often Sonny that's turned up for us. Kind of felt strange seeing him within 20 minutes having played a back pass that almost rolled City in on goal.
I think he's one of our best players, absolutely world class. He's not been the Son of the first 3 months of the season for a while now. He's not been as unbelievably efficient as he was. He looks tired, and we've said this for ages. And you know, he picked up an injury that he doesn't. You know, Sonny doesn't pick up injuries. That's sort of his thing. And I think it's all. I think. Obviously, there's a lot more expectation when it comes to Son and Kane. And yesterday, it was more a fact of our team looked knackered after 50, 60 minutes. They looked absolutely gone, legs gone. And you could tell, especially in the last 10 minutes, when we're pushing for a goal and they can't even close City down anymore. And I think a lot of that then gets aimed towards Son and Kane because they're the two world-class talents that people rely on for those goals. And I'm not saying Son had a particularly good game, but I think... The sort of the blame game that went on after is just a byproduct of them being brilliant, being world class players. But yeah, he didn't have his best game. But did anyone have their best game?
I think that's also quite underrated that like I've only seen it mentioned a couple of times. But so we've played like 100 million games this season. We played about 17 rounds of Europa League games. We started the season with like we had the manic period. It was like 7 games in 2 weeks or whatever, something like that. But City during the winter, like they had a couple of games called off, like COVID stuff. So, like I'm not saying it was like a winter break, but they did at least have time where they weren't playing, where they were resting, they were recuperating, they were getting fresh again, and like the way they just pulled away in the title race, the way that they've made themselves the favourites for the Champions League. Even yesterday, just they looked like a team who were halfway through the season rather than the back end of it. They looked like a team playing a League Cup final that would have been scheduled in February. And it was just another one of those things where we just couldn't get near them. We couldn't get near them for quality. We couldn't get near them for fitness. It was always just stacked against us.
Yeah, well, they're two starting 11s as well. You just rotate in and out. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? You don't play Mahrez, you can play like Ferran Torres. Gabby Jesus and Sergio Aguero didn't even get on the pitch. You know,
it's just
outrageous.
I think another thing that, Sean, you picked up on there that I think is really important to discuss because it's done the rounds a little bit today is the idea of fitness. And it was certainly in my mind after the first 45, I just thought, how long can we maintain this? Mm. How long can we keep? Because when you get physically tired, at some point mental tiredness is going to creep in, and we saw that happen. Even though Sissoko was probably one of the freshest players on the pitch, it just got to that point where the pressure just told on us and we were creaking and ultimately cracked. But doesn't make it any easier, does it, to see us concede in that way? I think that was probably the ultimate kicker that we have to put in the ugly, is that you do so much defending for so long, and then you concede to an unmarked man from a set piece that you should have never given away in the first place.
I think it was just more the fact that it was the exact same thing happening again. Aurier giving away a foul that he did everything right. He's got round Sterling. He's forced him down the line. He's got nowhere to go. You've won the battle. Now you just have to sort of hurry him into making a mistake. And he's just so impatient that he just goes straight through the back of him. So one, annoying. Then it's a cross into the area where we're so passive, so everyone's standing still, and Laporte gets a complete free run on Sissoko, who doesn't even know he's there. And it was like it was a hybrid of zonal marking and man marking, and I just couldn't work out what the aim was there. And I can't blame Mason for that, because we've been conceding those goals all again. But that was, you know, a second one. And the fact that it's Sissoko, like you said, who's supposed to come on and shore it up, and we just looked more and more shaky after he came on, is another annoying thing that we've seen happen before this season. So it was a strange sense of deja vu, a warming sense of deja vu. that sort of came over us as we conceded that, but you know, more the same.
Before we go on to talk about the future, is there anything else that I've missed in there that anyone wants to flag? But
there's not. I mean, Reguilon had a really bad game. Just looked like he'd lost his head.
Want to slag off?
Yeah, I don't know. He just looked like he'd lost his head after 20 minutes. Like the occasion had massively got to him. And I was like, you played in finals bigger than this, but clearly those 6,000 fans rattled him.
He's clearly very good, but he does have what the kids call the bozo gene. but that makes him more endearing in a way, because that is like, that is fully Spurs.
Yay.
Tough afternoon for Reguilon. I sort of felt like, do you know what? Reguilon's been having a bit of a rough patch just in general for about the last month or so. Seems to have lost a little bit of his confidence defending wise. Because I remember earlier on in the season, he made Mahrez look pathetic. He was brilliant. He absolutely battered him for 90 minutes. I think he got taken off, didn't he, Mahrez?
Yeah, he did.
But yesterday, Mahrez was frightening against Reguilon. He couldn't get his legs right, couldn't get his footwork right. He just was a wash. Let's go on to the beautiful stuff. I got so much from watching Ryan Mason walk out in front of that Spurs side yesterday. If like, yes, the result was rubbish and the feeling of losing was rubbish, but seeing Ryan Mason Jude just at the front of the line, kind of walking out with the team in the suit, it was really, really heartwarming, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was proper like this is my club, my one and only club sort of vibes, even though he did play for Hull as well. But
fraud.
God, yeah, you don't know this club. it's. I think one thing that might come out of this season is that this last little run of games will just help bring fans a little closer to the club by having Mason in there. They've pretty much done everything wrong up to this point, you know, with attritional football and Super League and stuff like that. So the detachment is probably as big as it ever has been. But yeah, that was nice and heartwarming. It was fuzzy feels for sure.
Anyone else pick out any other bits that kind of like just made him swoon yesterday?
The sound of the crowd has to go in there. It translated well on TV. They sounded loud. They sounded, you know, I heard a lot more Spurs singing than I did City singing, I'll say that. And it was nice having authentic crowd noise that isn't 2 seconds behind the and you did feel it. Do you know what I did feel? I had a momentary feeling of like, is this when Dyer made that block and it hit the post, and I did have a moment of, is this going to be like the Champions League quarter final second leg, where like the luck is just with us and things are happening, and you sort of, you know, City are much better but we're scoring goals. And although that dissipated quite soon after that, I did have, that was nice to have that moment of, God, this is fun again, isn't it? And then I totally had
maintained the faith in a smash and grab until Laporte's goal, pretty much. It just seemed like the longer City didn't score, the more anxiety would inevitably creep into their game. So, I don't think that was kind of misguided. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, an interesting thing was the fact that Pep went full strength as well. And I think we all expect him to play a team more like the Chelsea semi-final, which was a much more beatable team than that one. I mean, Jude's right in saying they've got two first 11s, but, you know, I would have much rather they rested De Bruyne and Gundogan for PSG, but it wasn't to be, and we'll just have to say Pochettino does a number on them on Wednesday and they're all knackered.
Go on, Poch.
Yeah, Butch.
Go on, Butch.
God, such a killer, isn't it? I think that's a really good point, actually. It was quite strange as the game was going on that you were watching thinking, oh my God, one goal could win this and it could be us. And yet at the same time thinking, if you take our season and that game on the whole into account, that would have been the most misleading thing to have ever happened to a football side ever. For us to just kind of like, having gone through the week that we have and having gone through the season that we have, and then City dominating the ball, the possession, the chances. I mean, it easily could have happened, but there was a little part of me watching on just thinking, like, how are we going to get a goal and nick this, you know? Mm. And then, sure enough, City found a way through, and that was the thing that killed me. I just found it really hard to deal with the fact that we'd conceded from a set piece. So just don't give them a set piece out on our right-hand side, their left-hand side, in a dangerous area that they can swing into the box. And then just, sure enough, it felt like it was coming. I just to finish up, I just quickly would like us to look to the future. Given that it looks like Nagelsmann is pretty much done with Bayern Munich. I mean, there's a lot. I saw Dan, you wrote about this today as well, and Shawnee, you did too. There's a lot to fix up in between now and the start of next season, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Yeah, it feels like one of the biggest summers for Levy in his 20 years at the club. You know, it really does feel like Spurs are at a crossroads. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, what I wrote today is that, you know, Mason came out after the game and said, you know, we're 5 years from City, which I don't think was wrong or an unfair assessment, but obviously the, you know, Pochettino had a 5-year cycle that literally ended with the Champions League final. And, you know, Mason was kind of suggesting that another cycle would have to start, and the team is kind of trapped bang in the middle of those two things. And Mourinho, you know, was supposed to kind of be the sort of add-on on the end of Pochettino's cycle that would just kind of drag them over the line and get some trophies before the process started again. And obviously that hasn't worked. I think he's only taken the squad backwards, to be honest. I think they're in a worse position now than they were when he was appointed. So, yeah, it feels like Levy's just got to get so many things right this summer. And let's face it, you know, it's the elephant in the room. It's taboo. But, you know, Kane's future is obviously a big part of it. I mean, you know, another kind of first-hand look at another team winning a trophy yesterday. And he needs assurances that, you know, Spurs are going to be challenging next year. He's not going to kind of sign on for another sort of 5-year project, is he, at this stage of his career? So, yeah, massive summer ahead for the club.
I saw a piece that said Levy will probably wait to see where we end up finishing. You know, seventh, and you sort of have to give way to the idea that massive spending, massive outgoings, you know, probably lose a couple of players, but you come fourth or fifth and he gets away with it just about again. Which makes you wonder where do you want to finish as a club? But you're right, Hensy, this is probably the biggest summer, I don't know, under Levy, because of the crossroads we're at, especially in terms of the manager you bring in. Do you bring someone who's a bit of a project manager? Do you bring in someone who's hopefully going to win a trophy in a year? This team doesn't look like they can do that at the moment. And you have to say some of these players probably need to be moved on. And the only way you keep your Sons happy, your Kane's happy now, is through massive investment into the squad and showing what the ambition of the club is. And do we have the cash to do that? Time will tell, right? Time will tell.
There's always the Super League millions.
Hello, is that Florentino? Is it too late to go back?
Is that a quick cash grab I hear?
There's also a real dearth of good managers that we can appoint. Like, Nagelsmann off the table just means that the quality of attainable managers is just a massive dip. And the last couple of days, I've just been really thinking, is now the time? Is it worth us being the club that gives ultimate control freak Ralf Rangnick the keys to just rebuild the club from top to bottom? Because I don't know what other good options are really out there.
Shawnee, so you wouldn't see that as too big a gamble?
I think just because there's... Who are like the obvious candidates for the job? Rodgers, I don't know if Leicester allow him to leave. I don't know if he wants to leave with the cycle of the project that they're in right now. Ten Hag from Ajax has gone a bit under the radar. I think he might be one that we might look at, but I don't know if he leaves for us after all that kind of stuff. Mm. And then from there, you're looking at guys like Graham Potter, who has the quality of players at Brighton isn't amazing, and they play decent football whenever Jude's not there.
Neil Maupay just skying them out of the stadium. He's about 6 yards out.
From there, I don't know who else you're looking at. Like Southgate, maybe, if he leaves England this summer. I really don't know who else is out there. So I'm just thinking, if we're going to go back into like another rebuild with a project that's going to be like a proper kind of, okay, in 5 years, we want to be back in the Champions League final, I think maybe it is the time to give Rangnick that kind of control, because I don't know anymore.
What do you reckon, G?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I just can't get around. I feel like we've really missed a chance here. Just as a club, when Ryan Mason talked about 3 or 4 years ago, or being 4 or 5 years behind City, it's like 2017, that was the chance to really catch up with the big boys, invest heavily in that squad, and they'd be massive, and it just didn't happen. And we're sort of in the doldrums now, which is quite odd. I mean, Graham Potter's Brian do play incredible football sometimes. It's just the amount of chances they sky. Like Lallana just will arrive onto a cutback and it will just soar into Rose End. You do sort of look at him on the touchline and think there's not really much more you can do. but yeah, I'm not sure.
Such a balance.
I guess the argument there is if Kane were to stay and Son were to stay, then he would have a much better array of forwards who can find the net work with. And they look quite decent defensively, Brighton, as well.
It's more about does Son and Kane stay for Potter, though, isn't it? Because
Is
Potter a name that you can say to Harry Kane and Heung-min Son is going to win you trophies in the next... I agree the football will probably improve and it'll be quite good to watch, but when it comes to FA Cup final against City again and it's Pep Guardiola facing off against Graham Potter, I mean, only time will tell, but as you said, Hainsey and Dan, this is the crossroads now we're at. You know, this is the rebuild we should have had when we got rid of Pochettino. I would, you know, we're back at the same thing. Why the hell did we get rid of Pochettino, for God's sake?
the one thing that I will end us on is the fact that, like, even though it was unfortunately a bit of a crap weekend, I am looking forward to the last 5 games with Ryan Mason in charge. I think it's one of those periods of football that we just got to enjoy. It's been a bit of a weird and wonderful ride. Or not even wonderful, just weird and at times quite crap ride this season. Watching us throw points away at so many different places. And now at least we've got 5 games to enjoy with Ryan Mason leading the team out, with Harry Kane and Son and hopefully Bale in there. When we scored against Southampton and won that game, like, that felt really, really good. And our running is not that difficult. Like, in comparison to, say, someone like Chelsea's. Chelsea are playing incredibly well, but they have got a grotesque running. Like, really, really difficult when you consider they've got to play Leicester in the FA Cup final. They've got the Champions League. They've got Leicester in the league as well. They've got, who else? They've got United still to play, potentially. They've got the worst. They've got a London derby, even though Fulham are not playing that well. They've got Fulham as well to play in a derby there as well. So they've got a difficult running. All I'm saying is not completely off the cards just yet.
Would you say that's the least London derby?
For Fulham, it's their big derby. For Fulham, for Chelsea, they don't care.
Oh, Chelsea. Sorry, I was thinking about West Ham for some reason.
Yeah.
But West Ham also have a fairly, it looked simple at times, but now you look at it and the teams that they've got coming up have all of a sudden found a bit of form. Especially they've got Burnley away. I think they've got Everton away. You know, it's wide open. It's just the thing now. Are the next 5 games incredibly important, or are they a completely free hit? I guess only time will really tell.
So Chelsea's running now. Real Madrid, Fulham, Real Madrid, City away, Arsenal, Leicester. Leicester in the FA Cup final, Aston Villa away on the last day of the season. Like, it's not easy.
Couple of big Super League games in there as well.
I mean, Liverpool can't be trusted at the moment. West Ham look like they could slip away. Mm. I'm being massively optimistic, but there is just enough there if we can kind of get it right. But yeah, we'll leave on that relatively positive note. All right, well, have a great week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. as ever, if you haven't subscribed, we'd love you to think about subscribing. Drop us a rating and a review and let us know what you thought of the pod. Get in touch on Twitter. I think that's the best way to get in touch with us all. It's where we'll be the most responsive. So catch us on there or on the Oh What a Night pod Twitter handle. Shoot us over your notes. We'll try and get back to as many of you as possible. We'll be back again at the end of the week to have a little bit of a natter about the weekend that's coming up as well. We've got a late kickoff. And then I think in line with Premier League clubs, we'll steer clear very much on social media, as it's social media blackout weekend as well. So we'll try and get in touch with you before the end of the week. If not, have a great week, everyone, and we'll speak to you all soon.